at Krebs Kissed at Charlie Barron's at Man Twog Minute. And make sure to check out Patreon.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The pro-Palestinian protests continue at dozens of America's college campuses. In Los Angeles, police called out a tactical alert for several hours last night. Multiple squad cars racing to the University of Southern California campus, where students reestablished an encampment that police tore down on Wednesday.
There are the usual chants and protests that calling for the liberation of Palestine. But overall, like, the student organizers are very peaceful, very intent. They have like rules for the encampment in order to keep everybody safe and healthy and protected.
One of the protesters there, 93, were arrested, graduation ceremonies canceled, and the campus was sealed off to outsiders. More violent weather through the heartland. Dozens of tornadoes reported across four states. The violent twisters leveling homes and businesses. Federal regulators saying a critical safety gap in Tesla's autopilot system might be responsible for hundreds of accidents and more than a dozen deaths. This is ABC News. Lawyers for Harvey Weinstein say the one-time movie mogul has been hospitalized in New York for what they're saying is a battery of tests. Weinstein was moved back to New York City on Friday following an appeals court ruling nullifying his 2020 rape conviction. The women who testified against Weinstein now bracing for a retrial. Canadian actress Erica Rosenbaum is among a group of women who came forward after allegations of sexual assault and harassment first surfaced against Weinstein. She spoke recently in Montreal about her harrowing experience with Weinstein.
I was afraid to have to mingle with him. I was afraid to run into him. I didn't want to work for him. And in the early 2000s, he was everywhere. He was the most powerful man in Hollywood.
Weinstein is due back in court next Wednesday, which will be the first step toward a possible retrial, but not necessarily his freedom, since Weinstein was also convicted of sex offenses in Los Angeles and sentenced to 16 years in prison there. I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I went to go see The Queen of My Dreams, which is a beautiful film about a mother-daughter relationship. So funny, so beautiful, so heartfelt. Would highly recommend it.
And that concludes our Monday morning segment of Here's How Pat Kreitlow is an Uncultured Slob. You are cultured, man. You are a big old cup of yogurt over there. I mean, we're talking some fruit on the bottom over there.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny.
I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would say when it comes to teaching science to little kids.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
And there she is, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. Welcome to Busted Pencils. Nancy, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. It's great to see you. It's great to be here.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Consumer advocates are warning people about the hidden costs of taking out small loans on smartphone apps. Here's Mike Moan.
The Center for Responsible Lending is out with findings that detail how earned wage advances from digital platforms come with extra costs disguised as things like tips. Traditional payday lenders are often criticized for charging excessive interest rates on loans that are usually around $500. The center's Lucia Constantine says customers are usually seeking smaller amounts from the apps, but she warns they can be just as costly.
They are trapping consumers in a cycle of borrowing that is similar to that of a payday loan.
The report says after using these financial products, customers are seeing overdrafts on their checking accounts increase by 56% on average. Industry leaders deny they're barraging customers with hidden fees, stressing that features like suggested tips are optional. More broadly, a bipartisan payday loan reform bill in the Wisconsin legislature failed to advance this month. Constantine says, like longstanding payday lenders, these cash advance apps can be hard to regulate. Meanwhile, she urges those in a bind to explore other options.
Try talking to their friends and family as a first source. The other option, which I would recommend, is reaching out to their credit union or banking institution to see if they can get some sort of small dollar loan.
She says places like credit unions typically provide more transparency on loan costs. According to the report, 3/4 of consumers took out at least one advance on the same day or day after a repayment was posted. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Showers, even a couple of thunderstorms possible today with breezy east winds nearly at 25 miles per hour at times, highs in the upper 50s. Showers, still a storm or two around for Sunday night. Breezy, temperatures in the lower 50s. Right now it's 55.
Civic Media. You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
What's up, everybody? I hope everyone had a wonderful end of the month here. You got Mark Becker here on the Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. Thanks for joining us once again. And once again, holy cow, we've got a banger of a guest, I gotta say. The person that's gonna be joining me is Mr. Ben Wickler. He is the chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. What's up, Ben?
What's up, Mark?
Hey, well, you know, I gotta say, starting this, I'm a little intimidated. You know, like, so when I always try to, you know, prepare and read up and do some research, and like, I was reading your Wikipedia page, because of course you have one, reading the things that you've done and the places that you've been, and, you know, it's like, oh my God, Howard Dean called you one of the smartest people under 35 in the country. And then just, you know, you co-founded the Student Global AIDS campaign. You represented them. You went to the freaking UN General Assembly. My God, worked on our dear friend Russ Feingold's campaign, Tammy Baldwin. You, by the way, wrote a number one bestseller with Al Franken. I mean, like, so many. You, Washington director for MoveOn.org. Like, holy cow, dude.
All right, this is getting a little embarrassing here.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm like, oh my God. I've been in rooms where it's like, I don't feel qualified to open my mouth. And then I'm reading this about what you've done. I'm like, this is one of those times. But thank you so much for being here.
Well, I'm honored to be on with you. And I'm a big fan of yours. I don't know if you know it. I've sent a million people the article that you wrote about your conversation with Ron Johnson.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
For me, the thing that I appreciate the most in politics is people who get involved, whether or not we agree on everything, who get involved for principle and to make other people's lives better. And you're one of those people that, you know, actually having a set of values that you're grounded in that guide you about what you do with your life, even when there can be a risk, or, you know, it might challenge people. Sticking up for what you know to be the right thing, to me, is that's the thing that makes our country move forward. And you've done that, and I'm really grateful to you for it.
Wow. We'll get you a check later. But I appreciate that very much. Thank you. That's very kind. You know, and one of the things that I was reading about you, and, you know, I wanted to start off with, like, why the Democrats? But, you know, I read about, you know, your father was a professor of ethics with focuses on international health. And he was a consultant to the World Health Organization. Your mom is an incredibly accomplished professor, created programs to help at-risk children. That's used worldwide, and she was a consultant to the United Nations. Like, growing up with such worldly influences, you know, what a blessing that would have been.
I feel tremendously lucky, and, you know, it was a real privilege to be able to learn from my parents and their work in the world. And both of them have this kind of approach to their work, and this is true of my step parents as well, where they think really hard about, you know, the things that they think matter the most, and then try to really figure out what's right and wrong and what the evidence says about how to make a difference. And that's what drew them to Wisconsin. The Wisconsin idea and the Wisconsin tradition is such a part of, I think, how they approach the world and how I grew up learning to approach the world. We're a state that, with under multiple political parties, has had this long tradition of a university system that believed the boundaries of the university are the boundaries of the state, where you should try to actually bring expertise and rigor, not just to, you know, thinking in an ivory tower, but how do you actually improve the world? And my dad has told me the story of, you know, he was a professor at the University of Wisconsin. When he arrived, they put him on a bus and went all around the state, the Wisconsin Idea Tour, which they do to this day, where you learn about the role of the University of Wisconsin system in supporting agricultural productivity and supporting, you know, watershed management and all these things that are just kind of part of how a well-run state operates. And this, the idea that people who work in the education system and academia should be in public service, the idea that people who work in politics should be public service.
Yeah.
I lead a political party, but I think I say over and over to our staff is the only measure of our work is the impact that has on people's lives. Mm-hmm. It's not about winning. It's not about, you know, it's not just about turning out the most votes. It's actually like, what does that lead to that makes a change for people? And that to me is what all this should be about.
Yeah, exactly. And so what about, you know, as you're growing up and all, as you're forming your opinions and everything, why the Democratic Party? What brought you there, and how did you get to be where you were?
So my mom is a social worker, and she worked at the University of Wisconsin across the hall from another social worker whose name was Ada Deer, who was the first Menominee Indian woman to graduate from the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Oh my God.
And when I was 11 years old, my mom's best friend, Ada Deer, who she worked with, you know, knew from social work, ran for Congress. And so I volunteered on Ada Deer's campaign. Now, how did she come to run for Congress? Well, years before that, she had traveled from the Menominee Reservation, Menominee County, to the Democratic Party of Wisconsin headquarters to say that she wanted to start a county party for the Menominee County Democrats.
Okay.
And the people at the Democratic Party of Wisconsin office said, you shouldn't start a county party. You should run for office. And she wound up running for Secretary of State, and then she ran for Congress. So my first experience on a campaign was volunteering for her, putting up yard signs, stuffing envelopes. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with it as something that was inspiring and could make a difference. And then in high school, I interned for Ed Garvey when he ran for governor.
Yes.
And that was a totally doomed but totally joyful campaign. And then Tammy Baldwin, who was a state representative. So my mom and I, when I was in high school, we organized debates for high school students and their parents with state legislators. And they would debate about things that would affect high school students. So whether the drinking age should be lowered from 21 to 18, for example. And Tammy always, she came and then she would win the debates. And then when she ran for Congress, my friends and I all volunteered on her primary campaign. The day after, when she won, the newspaper headline in Madison was "Youthquake" because so many young people had turned out to vote for her.
Oh wow! So
I grew up, you know, with that, with Russ Feingold and his work with John McCain on campaign finance reform. Yes. Just really inspired by people who were in this for the right reasons and trying to make a difference. And that kind of, you know, led me. I worked mostly around issues like defending healthcare against the attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act and, you know, trying to support democracy and peace and environmental, you know, climate change work, things like that. But I wound up running for chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin because in this moment, even though I think most Republicans, most independents, most Democrats agree on most things, the Republican Party as an institution is spinning out into this MAGA fringe world. And the Democratic Party is an essential bulwark against the decline of democracy in our whole country. I want us to get back to the point where the big argument is whether you should, you know, do tax cuts for the rich and let it trickle down, or try to do tax cuts for the middle class and, you know, make the big corporations pay more. Those kinds of arguments are what I grew up with. But right now it's like, should we be a democracy or a dictatorship on day one of the next presidency? Should we overturn the last election retroactively, or should we, you know, let the voters decide who's leading the country? I think on abortion, it's like, should politicians be making people's most intimate medical decisions? Or is this issue, which people of good faith have profoundly different views on, is this come down to, you know, families and their faith and their healthcare providers? Or should this be in the political arena? And I feel like at this moment in the state legislature, Tammy Baldwin's race, House races with people like Derek Van Orden, and especially the presidential race for Biden versus Trump, I'm really proud to be a Democrat and working to build a Democratic Party that stands up for principles that really should be uniting principles that the vast majority of Americans endorse.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, as the Republican chairman that I was, you know, going through a lot of that shift that I've had over the last, you know, many years. And it was, I think it kind of started when the Republican Party was, you know, oh, we're the big tent, all this stuff. And then the marriage equality debate came. And my brother is a gay man. He lives out in Washington, D.C. And, you know, like I fundamentally grew up with him. I knew who he was. He's not changed who he was since he was little. Who the hell are we to tell him that he can't marry the person that he loves? And so I came out. I think I was the only state official that did that said, hey, you know, I think marriage equality is not a big deal. And, oh, my God, I got killed for that. You know, people were so mad. But then, like, I look at, you know, the last 100 years, and you look at issues, you know, civil rights, AIDS epidemic, gay rights, marriage equality, women's rights, the Me Too movement, Black Lives Matter. You look at where the yardstick for me is, like, what's the right side of history? And so often it's not the Republican Party. And so, you know, I kind of look at those things, and that was one of the big, I mean, Russ Feingold, becoming friends with him and having hours of conversations with him was helpful too. But seeing those things, and my argument always to GOP, the Republican voters, was we need to figure out to be on the right side of history. But so often we weren't there, you know, and I look at the Democratic Party and that's, they were.
There you go. I mean, I think if we go back to the, you know, 1850s and 60s, we'd both be Republican anti-slavery people.
Right.
You know, that's a great tradition. The Party of Lincoln, the Party of Ripon, that is one of the great sources of progress in our country. And there have been great progressive champions of many of the ideals that you and I and most people share.
Right.
But, you know, so many of these things, it's... people have kind of sorted themselves across the two parties now much more than had been true in the past. And the Democratic Party that I chair now was actually formed in 1948 in Wisconsin by people who, from the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and the Progressive Party, which used to be a big force here, to counter Joe McCarthy, who they saw as terrible. And that, I feel like in some ways it's like 75 years later, here we are building a big tent party to stop Trump, who's kind of in the McCarthyist tradition of dishonesty and narcissism and viciousness and cruelty and domination. And we just need to be better than that. You know, we need to summon our best angels. And didn't Lincoln have a speech about that, our better angels. That's now that the Democratic Party is carrying that torch at this moment. And I think that there's a, it's been really painful to watch a lot of people who, probably got into politics because they were called there by their principles, who have watched Trump break every one of those principles. Mm-hmm. And then they have to decide, do they want to just get ahead in that party, or do they want to actually stick up for their best selves? And so many of them have not taken the Liz Cheney path, but instead have taken the path of saying, you know, I'm just going to put my head down and go along with this. Cause you know,
Right. And it's interesting to see how those people are now on the outs with the Republican Party themselves, too. And here we're talking with Ben Wickler. We're going to be right back here on Civic Media and the Rational Revolution.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
In honor of National Cheeseball Day, what food totally disgusts you? For me, it's anything where cheese is crammed together and soft. Why you would put it all into a ball or a log or a loaf, I don't understand. What about you, Conrad? You got a disgusting food?
I like tuna. It just can't be from in a can. It just has the worst smell in me. I just think it's nasty.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Earl Ingram.
In Wisconsin, parents pay one-third of their income on child care. Think about what we need our income for. Shelter, food, clothing, gas bill, electric bill. And we're talking about one child. This is a crisis. Young families are saddled with what is almost impossible to deal with.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We are back here on the Rational Revolution on Civic Media. Mark Becker here talking with Ben Wickler, chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. On the other end of the break, you were talking about something that I did want to hit on. You were talking about growing the big tent, and you know it was something that was a buzzword when I was banging in the GOP. You know, we would talk about how we're the party of the big tent, which I don't believe that whatsoever anymore. But and this is going to require a little bit of setup. My question with the Democratic Party and you know, as a party official, when I was the chair, I think the biggest thing that you can do is outreach, bringing people into the mix. And so, you know, as we talked about how the Democratic Party was the party of big ideas, from, you know, supporting women's rights and Black Lives Matter, all that kind of stuff. How does the Democratic Party reach a moderate on some issues? And so, like, here's an example, like gender fluidity, right? I don't understand that. Not that I am against it. I'm not. I just don't. My brain's got to wrap around it a little bit. How does the Democratic Party reach people that are on a moderate side of that while still, you know, honoring and being respectful and seeing people that are already in the tent that have been there? Because, you know, I think there's so much opportunity. And how do you reach those people?
It's such an important question. And I think in some ways your own life story speaks to this, mm-hmm. which is that knowing people and seeing them, and, you know, there's all kinds of different people who like identify different ways and love different ways and live different ways and, you know, speak different ways and look different ways. And the experience of, you know, knowing someone's humanity and then hearing the rhetoric about them, often the disjuncture between those two things, the conflict between those two things, creates a moment that everyone has to choose whether they want to believe the experience of their own humanity and engaging with other people, or just the rhetoric. And I think on something like, you know, questions around gender right now, on the one hand, like building personal relationships with people, there's some research about deep canvassing where you have long conversations mm-hmm. with people and really learn about their experience and share experiences with them, that can make a difference. The other side of it, I think, is really about freedom, which is that there's a shared idea that we're a free country, that we might disagree about things, but we all think that it should be up to us what kind of lives we lead. And someone might, you know, really not identify with and you know, find really strange, like, you know, where someone else is coming from, but might be able to agree that the government shouldn't be making those decisions, that, right. that a politician shouldn't be able to tell a parent like how they should be able to treat their kids. There's these policies that Ron DeSantis has pushed around gender that could lead to kids being, I think it was Ron DeSantis, that could lead to kids being removed for child abuse if their parents support their kids, like, you know, their own gender identities.
It's crazy.
And
I'm
old enough to remember when the Republican Party said that the family was the bedrock of American society and that you're supposed to honor the family above everything else. Like, mm-hmm. this is, you know, you have the same thing with abortion, that like these decisions around abortion and reproductive health care, when and whether and how to start a family, are some of the most personal and intimate decisions that any family makes. And the idea that any politician is going to barge in like the Kool-Aid guy and tell people that the doctor's going to jail if they you know, support a decision that a family has made is just, it's so beyond the pale. Mm-hmm. However you feel about you know, what people might be deciding there. And, you know, again, there will be some people who disagree about any of these things. But I, you know, I know that most people really want to be able to figure this stuff out for themselves and want the people they love to be able to figure this out for themselves. And I think the best tradition of our country is that people can discover themselves and try things out and do different things different ways. And there's a rich history of that. It's what draws people to the United States of America. And it's something that I pledge allegiance to. You know what I mean? It is, mm-hmm. to me, it's inherent in the idea of what this country is about. And that, I think, is under threat right now by a branch of politics that wants to control how everyone else lives. That is really flies in the face of our best traditions that at our best are spread across both parties and across people who hate politics and don't like either party. We can agree on freedom.
Yeah. And I, you know, that's something that I wanted to hit on too. It's, you know, you look at what role we're going to play here in 2024. The very freedoms that we enjoy are the that fundamentally is on the ballot here, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's trying to figure all of that out and look at, you know, the big picture of like, what role is Wisconsin going to play in that? You know, I had a job where I commuted for an hour one way. And so I got to listen to podcasts and all that. I said that my gateway drug was Pod Save America. Right. Into some of the progressive mindset and all that kind of stuff. But it's really interesting too, because like, man, 8 years ago, if I would close my eyes and look where I am and look what I believe and then open up now today, like so much has changed within me from my understanding of issues with race. My wife is a Black woman and, you know, we have children. One looks just like me. One looks just like her. Holy crap. You learn a lot. You learn a lot. And so being a county supervisor, seeing need in the community, all that kind of stuff, I look at where the Republican Party, where I thought they were 8 years ago, it's not even close. Because they're, you know, what they're arguing about, you know, election fallacies and all of these, they're so consumed with this hatred, it's unrecognizable.
What's so striking for me is that, you know, we knock on a lot of people's doors around the state, and most voters who vote Republican are not spending every waking day trying to seek retribution against Trump's enemies. That is coming fundamentally from Trump. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? And there are some people get whipped up into the kind of energy of that. But I think most Americans would rather not think about politics every waking hour.
Yeah.
And what they want is to like have themselves and their families feel safe and have their communities, neighborhoods feel like safe and inclusive places where they can grow up. They want a family supporting job. They want safe, you know, drinking water and they want to make sure their kids can come home safe from school. And maybe they love, you know, hunting, or maybe they love like whatever hobby they love.
Right.
And they don't want the government interfering with that, but they do want to make sure that, you know, there are actually some woods. And
right.
Like there's a set of things that are actually, in a way, like should be just the things that we agree on as a society that we're going to do. We're going to make sure that the things basically function for people. And I think that is the job of government, right? It's to protect people's freedoms, and to make sure that as a society, we're helping folks out who have needs and giving folks the opportunity to better their lives and you know, support people through challenges. And sometimes that means standing up to special interests that want to rip people off. But like all that stuff is kind of creates the space for people to lead the personal lives they want. And so much of Trumpian politics is about dominating people you don't like and you know, reinforcing the structures of power in a way that is so far removed from what most people are looking for from politics.
You're exactly right. And we're going to hit on that big time here on the next, on the other end of the break. So we're talking with Ben Wickler here, chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, on the Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. We'll see you back in a little bit.
Eagle 1490 AM.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The pro-Palestinian protests continue at dozens of America's college campuses. In Los Angeles, police called out a tactical alert for several hours last night. Multiple squad cars racing to the University of Southern California campus, where students reestablished an encampment that police tore down on Wednesday.
There are the usual chants and protests that calling for the liberation of Palestine. But overall, like, the student organizers are very peaceful, very intent. They have like rules for the encampment in order to keep everybody safe and healthy and protected.
One of the protesters there, 93, were arrested. Graduation ceremonies canceled and the campus was sealed off to outsiders. More violent weather through the heartland. Dozens of tornadoes reported across four states. The violent twisters leveling homes and businesses. Federal regulators saying a critical safety gap in Tesla's autopilot system might be responsible for hundreds of accidents and more than a dozen deaths. This is ABC News.
The Yankees crushed the Brewers. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It was a long night for the crew. The Yankees beat the Brewers at AmFam Field last night 15-3. Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, Giancarlo Stanton, all with home runs. Milwaukee starting pitcher Joe Ross giving up the first seven runs in five innings. NBA, more bad news for the Bucks. Damian Lillard doubtful. An MRI shows he has a strained Achilles. Expected not to play in Game 3 tonight in Indy. The Pacers lead the series 2-1. NFL, the Packers add 11 more players in the draft, including Tulane quarterback Michael Pratt, who got a call last night in the seventh round, just getting out of the pool when the call came through.
What's up, man? How you doing? I'm doing well. I'm here with all my family and friends. Yes, sir.
Well, get your jackets.
Green Bay.
That's Tulane quarterback Michael Pratt. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Showers, even a couple of thunderstorms possible today with breezy east winds nearly at 25 miles per hour at times. Highs in the upper 50s. Showers, still a storm or two around for Sunday night. Breezy, temperatures in the lower 50s. Right now it's 55.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Do you owe back taxes? Call Tax Solutions now and get some help. For a limited time, the IRS offers a tax forgiveness program called the Fresh Start Initiative. Our team can make it easier for you to pay back taxes, avoid tax liens, and get a fresh start.
I call Tax Solutions now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Call Tax Solutions now. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinaire on Air with Jane Matinaire. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490 AM WLCX and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
State Senator Kelda Royce in Richland County. UW System made the unilateral decision to completely vacate the campus by July 1st of this year.
It's so short-sighted to think it costs a little bit more money to run it and there aren't as many students, so let's just shut it down. A smart business owner would say now is the time to invest because we know every person that comes through the door, you're going to get 40-fold the investment from how they're going to be able to give back to our state.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinaire and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, the Madison Mallards' Kyle Chisholm joins us to talk all things baseball. Three headlines in a lie. I hope you can join us.
Matinaire on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hold you in his armchair, you can feel him.
Producer Todd playing the hits here. No, I'm just kidding. It's the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker here on Civic Media. Hey, download the app. If you like what you hear, you want to hear some more, Civic Media app is available anywhere your apps are found, and you can find us. And this episode here, talking with Mr. Ben Wickler here. He's the WISDEM's chair. I want to talk here. We briefly hit on a little bit right before the break. You know, my gateway drug was Pod Save America, and they were glowing about you so much, you know, leading up to that election, talking about the job that you were doing during that time. And the question that I have is, what did we learn from that 2020 election? And how can we use what we learned in the races of, you know, Trump, Tammy Baldwin's race, because we got a lot going on here.
We so do. And I think there's two really big lessons I want to pull out from the 2020 election. The first is, no matter what the polls say, assume that Wisconsin is within one percentage point.
Yeah.
We're the land of the nail biter. We're the only state where four of the last six presidential elections has come down to less than 1 point. And I remember vividly this poll. It almost seems like laughable to say it. There was a poll that said that Biden was up by 17 points in Wisconsin.
Outlier. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a bad sample.
Just completely off their rocker polls.
Yeah.
In 2022 in the Senate race, all these polls that said Mandela Barnes was absolutely toast. If people had not listened to those polls and recognized he was within a point, and we probably could have made up that point, he would have won. And I think in 2020, our strategy at the Democratic Party and with our allies, the Biden campaign and others, was to treat this race like it was tied all the way through and work everywhere to leave no stone unturned, write no one off, take no one for granted, to communicate in every language, in every zip code, in every medium we could. So on one hand, there's that. The second side of this coin, though, is in that election, it was the midst of the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. The Biden campaign had protocols about, you know, if you have this much COVID prevalence, you have to be this virtual. We had the third biggest outbreak in the country after the Dakotas because of the Republican lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And so we stayed off the doors. We didn't knock on people's doors and talk to them in their communities. We didn't have live in-person rallies. We were just a virtual campaign. And I think that the decision, based on what we knew at the time, was the best decision we could make. At the same time, the Republicans knocked on 2 million doors in our state. Trump came and did 10 giant rallies in our state. They had a full spectrum campaign. And I think that we could have won by a lot more if we had done all the things we know make a difference. So my approach to this election cycle is to learn the first lesson and show up everywhere all the time. I want us to be more organized, communicate more with more people in every period of time through every channel than the GOP does. That is the goal. And the second thing is, this time we're not going to be virtual. We don't anticipate that there will be another earth-shaking pandemic. But we've been knocking on the doors all this year, all last year. We've been calling phones, we've been texting people, we've been encouraging people to write letters to the editor of their local weekly newspapers. We've been doing relational organizing where people reach out to friends and family and then, you know, flag if there are people who might need an extra touch or something in their mailbox. Like, we want to be using all the tools at our disposal and assume that the Republicans will too.
Yep.
And on that note, the Republican chair who I saw yesterday, he's going around saying, look, Democrats have been doing all the early voting and absentee voting. We're going to use every legal channel available to us this time because we don't want to leave votes on the table. So Democrats, do not take for granted that Republicans will shoot themselves in the foot with their tactics in this election. You should treat this like figure out that the level of panic that leads to productive anxiety. Try to stick it right there. Don't despair. Don't think it's fine. Think that you might be the reason why Biden wins or loses, depending on how hard you work in this election. And if we're all in that mode, then I think we'll do everything and then we'll win.
Hopeful anxiousness. You know, yeah, something like that. And I look at, you know, the last 2020 was, I think, kind of, it was about basic fundamental rights. There was the summer of awakening from Black Lives Matter. There was the Me Too movement, all that kind of stuff. And 2020 is a fight for our basic freedoms.
Yeah.
You know, and like our very democracy, our republic is on the ballot in 2024.
I mean, you just had to watch the Supreme Court yesterday.
Yes.
Where a lawyer representing the former president was saying that telling the military to execute a coup should be
totally
not
cool.
criminally liable. Yeah, I mean, like, shocking things that I would never have expected to be talked about in our nation's highest court. That's what Trump's talking about here. And like, I don't want to look in the mirror the day after November 5th and feel like there was anything that I could have done that I didn't do. And I don't think anyone who really cares about the future of democracy in this country wants to have that feeling. So it's all hands on deck. I'm glad you're doing the show. If someone's listening right now, the fact that you're tuning in means you get how important this is. And, you know, I want us to keep our eye on the ball and do the things that'll matter most until the polls close. And you know, hopefully we win by more than one point. There won't be a recount.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, hey, tell the president, tell Tammy Baldwin to come on down. We'd love to talk to both of them. But I think what's so hard is balancing, you know, wanting to talk about the accomplishments that they've had, you know, Biden, Senator Baldwin, all that, with like the elephant in the room that like, yo, I mean, this is like, if you want to have more of these elections, because they're cool, we should not vote for the guy that tried to overthrow one, right? So having, it's such a balancing act, because there are a lot of accomplishments to run on. I mean, truly, how we've gotten out of the COVID pandemic has been mind-blowing.
Yeah, more successful than any other country in the world, really. For all the things that people are rightly frustrated with, and prices are number one on that list, we have less inflation than all the other rich countries on earth. And we have lower unemployment. We have like this has been, from a global perspective, a masterclass in how to deal with a very tough hand. And you know, we're in the midst of this of the kind of COVID comeback now. And so we do have to, I think we have to do both, though. We have to explain what we're for, what we've done that's evidence for why we can actually do the things that we say that we're for. And we have to make sure that people are clear about what they get if they vote for the other guy. And I think that it's like walking and chewing gum at the same time. We have to be able to do both.
Yeah, and I think it's so important too with, you know, Tammy Baldwin, who's wildly popular in the state. I mean, you know, Reid Ribble would always talk about the Obama Ribble voters. Well, she has that too. There are people that vote for both Tammy Baldwin and whatever Republican is at the top of the ticket too. So I mean, you know, how can we work with her on a candidate who, you know, seems to only want a vacation in Wisconsin around election time that she's going to be going up against? What can we learn from her?
Yeah, one thing I'll say. So Tammy Baldwin is a great senator, a great campaigner. She's present in every corner of Wisconsin. She actually listens to people. Then she goes and fights for them. They know that she fights for them. She stands up to special interests. And in 2018, her opponent ran out of money 3 weeks before the election, stopped running any TV ads, and basically fell through the floor. So Tammy Baldwin won in a landslide in 2018, in part because her opponent, you know, in trying to catch up to Tammy early, wound up having no gas in the tank in the end.
Whoops.
We cannot expect that to happen with Eric Hovde, who is a mega self-funder, who has as much money as he wants to spend. He will be putting in money all the way through the end. And that race could very well be close. Right now, it's like within 3 percentage points. It's one of the closest Senate races in the country. We have to treat this as another five-alarm fire. Now, the good thing is what Tammy Baldwin, Biden, Democrats in the state legislature stand for around freedom, around standing up for the middle class and standing up to special interests, like, you know, being there for working people and building a state that works for everybody, and against abortion bans and book bans and overturning elections. Those things are uniting messages and values for every Democrat up and down the ballot in this election, and really most Wisconsinites. Those are things most Wisconsinites want. So I don't think that there's I think that her message essentially has been demonstrated to be the one that works for everybody. And when you look at what the Biden campaign is doing when they come here, they're talking about exactly the things Tammy Baldwin's supporting, the investing in infrastructure, replacing the Blatnik Bridge from Duluth to Superior. Tammy Baldwin cast the tie-breaking vote for a lot of those investments. You know, the bringing down the cost of insulin to $35 a month. Tammy wrote that provision. The president signed it into law. The Respect for Marriage Act. Tammy Baldwin wrote that bill and got that bipartisan consensus. They could send it to the Resolute desk and get the president's signature on it. And that, to me, is one of the strengths of this moment. We are pretty united as a party in terms of the values and the vision that we stand for. And the idea, the orientation, that we have to show up everywhere. Kamala Harris was just in La Crosse, which is, you know, not in 2016, yeah. I didn't see a lot of presidential candidates there. In 2020, COVID also didn't see a lot of presidential candidates there, but we've been in Western, Northern, Eastern and Southern Wisconsin and Central Wisconsin. Like, we're going to be everywhere all the time. That's the path.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm a little bit nerdy when you kind of dig into some of the numbers and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that one of the biggest impacts on this election too is going to be the new maps, because, you know, now these, you know, every little thing can bring people out from different parts of the state, and having competitive districts and maybe having some sort of semblance of representative government at the state level is going to be huge. And so we've had fantastic candidates like the former host here, Chris Alfheim, is going to be running, and I think she'd be fantastic, in her role. But there are candidates like her all over the state. Whereas yes. In 2 years ago, 4 years ago, you know, if you're a Democrat and you have a solid resume, why the hell would you want to do it just to get your butt kicked by 6-7 points?
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for everyone who did run, even under the
for sure. Yes, before. Yes.
Thank God they did. Yes. And some of those folks are running again and are better known now because they ran before.
Yes,
there are also candidates who told me, you know, I was encouraging to run before, who told me they would not run under the old maps unless exactly. their districts were actually competitive. And the number of competitive districts has tripled.
Yes.
So there's so many voters in Wisconsin finally, for the first time, have an actual say in who represents their district. And my hope, maybe this is asking too much, you can tell me as a former Republican candidate chair, my hope is that at least some Republicans will say, hey, it looks like the majority of voters now determine who gets the majority in the legislature. And in my own district, the general election matters more than the primary. I better take a look at what my constituents actually want now, instead of just thinking about what's going to play well on right-wing radio in my primary. And maybe it's too much to ask, but my deepest hope is that the GOP kind of moves towards Wisconsin and away from Fox News Channel when it comes to thinking through, you know, the kind of things that might be a good idea with public policy here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of, I think that would be that might be asking a lot after a decade plus of, you know, carte blanche doing really whatever you want, and the only person stopping you is, you know, a Democratic governor. So, you know, I think we talked about with Lee Snodgrass here when you have a leader of the assembly that tells the leader, the minority leader, you don't matter in open forum. I mean, that's a problem. That's a huge problem. Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's this famous book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, that said that you might think that new evidence persuades scientists to change their minds about things. But what actually happens often is that the people who came up in science thinking one thing eventually die out. They leave, they retire. And then the people who have adjusted to new realities are the people who take over. And I wonder, it might be that Robin Voss will never accept the idea that Democrats have something legitimate to say, right, even if they win more votes. I remember vividly after Tony Evers won in 2018, Robin Voss held this press conference and was like, you know, you take away Milwaukee and Madison, and Republicans would have a majority in this election. And guess what? Every voter counts the same in the state. And they were like, Tony Evers is going to come in here with his liberal agenda. We were elected to stop that. And it's like, you were elected to represent your constituents, right, as one of 99 assembly representatives. The idea here is the will of the people shall be the law of the land. That's supposed to be the idea. And, you know, you can organize and advocate and protest, but what the GOP strategy has been here is to try to thwart majoritarian rule, to try to thwart the power of the public to be able to actually change policy. And that's against the underlying principle of democracy. And that's ultimately what we're fighting for here.
Yeah, I think, I don't know what was that really glaring election. I mean, all the elections have really underscored the problem that we have. But there was where Democrats won 62% of the statewide assembly votes, but only 38% of the districts. So, I mean, you know, representative democracy is cool. And we're going to keep talking about it on the other end of the break here with Ben Wickler on the Rational Revolution here on Civic Media.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
It's a polka party, and for good reason. 30 years ago, legislation making the polka our state dance became official in Pulaski.
I think everybody in Pulaski showed up in Zielinski Hall or on the streets because it was a polka day celebration.
That's then-Governor Tommy Thompson who signed the legislation in April 1994. But do you know who got the barrel rolling on the idea in the first place? The Wisconsin Polka Boosters, a class of second graders, or the State Folk Museum? The answer coming up.
It's tradition, it's culture, it's food, it's beer, you know, heritage.
Heritage back to the 1840s when the polka became popular with Europeans and came to America with them. So who started the Make Polka Our State Dance movement? A class of Madison second graders, but the Boosters and Folk Museum supported those efforts. It's a cultural slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
What's up, everybody? We are on the Rational Revolution here. Mark Becker is your host. Hey, that's me. We're on Civic Media, and we're talking with Ben Wickler, chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Previously, we were talking about your counterpart, our dear friend, Mr. Andrew Iverson, who's the chairman of Wisconsin GOP. He came under fire, actually, for comments on our show from a former staffer that he was talking about voter suppression and voter intimidation tactics that Andrew wanted him to do during the 2020 election. And I want to ask, how much evidence is needed of Republican, you know, they talk about Democrats having all of these, you know, all the tactics and all of these illegal things. When are they going to look in the mirror? And when will someone do something about that?
I've thought about this a lot, and I think ultimately parties change when it's clear that the thing that they're doing doesn't work for them. Mm. So when you look back over the last 20 years, the most successful Republican politician in America is Donald Trump. And, you know, like George W. Bush getting reelected in 2004 was the last time any Republican did better than Trump has done. Trump won in 2016. He lost in 2020. So that puts him one behind George W. Bush, and no one's really clamoring for George W. Bush's version of the GOP. But for a while, you know, if you think about like 2008 and 2012, in some ways it was trying to like, it was the same kind of Republican Party that George W. Bush had done. Now, I had very, very serious differences with the many, many things that that Republican Party was trying to do mm-hmm. and its policies, but it was different from what Trump is trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think that for aspiring politicians now, you know, Trump's strategy is to pull every dirty trick in the book, bend and push every law, lie and dissemble, do whatever it takes to win, crush, humiliate his opponents, divide, demonize. And that seems like the most successful thing. People look up to that. And the Democratic Party, people came up looking up to, you know, Barack Obama, who doesn't do any of those things, has a totally different approach to politics. And, you know, I think the Democratic Party is kind of shaped by that culture. And then now, you know, Joe Biden's president, and there's a real sense of, you know, kind of, I think, decency and empathy as the core of Democratic politics.
So,
and I think that if Trump loses badly, and this kind of strategy and what Ron Johnson has been doing now and what, you know, the kinds of tactics that we've seen, if those start backfiring and lead to mass rejection of Republican politicians, then people will try to, you know, bring a different kind of approach to this work. I think the only way to really bring about change in the GOP to force that look in the mirror is for this to be such an electoral disaster for Republicans that the Republicans who want their party to be competitive again try a different kind of strategy and build a different kind of culture.
So how do we do that? You know, we obviously we can talk about the danger that Trump is to the fundamental foundation of our country, but what are we going to run on? You know, what accomplishments can we really talk about with Joe Biden and what he's done over the last 4 years to really set that up for people?
President Biden has done something that people thought was impossible, which is to get Republicans and Democrats to work together to start investing in building things in this country again. So that's the first thing I'd point to. There are places all over our state where we're actually building new plants, rebuilding bridges, doing these replacing the lead pipes in Milwaukee and cleaning up forever chemicals and in Wausau and all over Wisconsin, removing those piles of coal in Green Bay, like all these things that have been on the to-do list forever are finally actually happening. And if you look at like the National Building Trades Union endorsement video of President Biden and the laborers, LIUNA ads they're running all over the state, people are working. The out-of-work list is empty and has been. And we're creating new opportunities for people who don't go to college to enter skilled trades, get apprenticeships, join unions, become part of the team of people building this country. And we're relieving student debt for people that got conned into going to for-profit schools that wound up hoodwinking them, or people who went into public service, became a police officer or a firefighter, and what they want, they qualify for student debt and under student debt relief. And under Donald Trump, they were all denied the debt relief that they'd earned by through their public service. These are things that actually make life better for people. And in every community in the state, there's something that President Biden, with Tammy Baldwin's tie-breaking vote, very often made possible. So the first thing is letting people know the stuff that has been getting better where they live because of these leaders, which right now most people have no idea. It's just stuff that's happened in the background. Everyone's annoyed by construction, but then they're happy when the road is repaired. Well, you might not realize that those road repairs were needed because Republicans refused to actually move on rebuilding this country until finally, Joe Biden got it done. So start with the impact on people's lives and then go to the fact that President Biden is trying to finish the job. He's madder than anyone about rising costs. He's tackled these drug companies who've had a hammerlock on Washington, D.C., who started reducing the cost of things like insulin and prescription drugs. But we need more Democrats in Congress so we can expand those programs, negotiate lower prices for the drugs that so many people need to be able to get by. And at the same time, crack down on price gouging, on junk fees that happen when you buy concert tickets or airline tickets or whatever, like that help people be able to afford their mortgages. That's all stuff that President Biden is laser focused on because he's lived it. He knows what it's like to actually be, a middle-class person from a working family. And if he gets another term, he's going to keep bringing those costs down and fighting for regular folks. And that, to me, that, whatever people feel, whatever frustrations they feel about the economy or this or that, they get in their gut that Biden actually knows what it's like and is going to fight for them. But he's not just going to hand out giant tax breaks to the ultra wealthy the way Trump did.
Yeah. I always get a kick at it when people say, oh, Donald Trump, he gets us. It's like, no, he doesn't. So right. So we're talking with Ben Wickler here. Now we got a minute left. This is the age old question. If people say, how can I help? What do people do?
So that's my favorite question.
Isn't it though?
First,
yes.
It's great. There's nothing brings a smile to my face as a lifelong organizer.
Yeah.
If you are a Wisconsinite, if you're listening to this and you live somewhere in Wisconsin, you can start by voting and double checking that your voter registration is right. Go to myvote.wi.gov. Second, join the Democratic Party. Go to wiskdems.org/join and you'll get information about your local county party meetings. You can start going to those meetings and getting plugged in to go knock on doors and call people's phones, or just bring brownies to the meeting and make sure the other people who are volunteering. If it's intimidating for you, we will teach you how to do it. It is totally fine. And you can warm up and practice with folks at the office before you actually go out and talk to voters. Think about running for office. Think about becoming a kind of captain for your own group of friends and family. We have so many ways that we can support you reaching out to people. And you should know this election will come down to potentially 2 or 3 votes per precinct in Wisconsin, which means that you could flip a precinct that flips the state, that flips the entire presidential election.
Ben Wickler.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Todd Albaugh.
Everybody join us next time as we recap the weekend news events and kick off It's Gonna Be May Week.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
It's gonna be May.
Busted pencils. Fully loaded.
blooded education talk.
When you have a fully funded, privatized voucher system, Heather, help us out.
Wisconsin has made a choice to disinvest from the public good and put money into a wholly unaccountable system and just let their political cronies laugh all the way to the bank while our kids pay the price.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.